Welcome to the KNEL Radio Podcast, your podcast for news, sports, music, and talk radio. KNEL Radio Podcast is your resource to local news and sports from the heart of Texas and the Texas Hill Country. Join us weekly for a Hillbilly Hits radio show highlighting traditional country music and artists. And At Home with Debbie Rule, a talk show about home, family, and relationships. KNEL Radio Podcast, making a difference in your life today.
And this, you're talking about the man on a bicycle with a backpack. In order for us to stop and talk to him, it is the same as if we stop and talk to somebody on a traffic offense. We have to have a reason, a probable cause to stop and talk to him. I wish we could stop and talk to every one of them, but if they're doing nothing wrong and we cannot associate them with anything, then it's hard for us to stop and talk to them. I understand, but for us to stop and talk to them, we have to have probable cause. We cannot just stop. And the courts are not ruling in our favor much anymore, so it's getting harder and harder for us to do our job. There was a day when we could have stopped and talked to them, but now it's getting harder and harder for us to be able to do what we need to be doing.
My name is Craig Isbell, and this question is probably more for the chief than for you, sir. But I was just wondering how many field contacts for narcotic suspects your officers were turned. How many field contacts your officers are turning in a week on consensual contacts?
Why we're here tonight is frustration. And I'll go into that here in a second. You know, frustrated, why can't this happen? Why doesn't this happen? Why aren't you able to do these things? There's so much, I don't know how many of you in here pay a lot of attention to social media, but that's one of the worst unreliable sources that you can refer to, because
Bridget,
you think you have an idea of what we're dealing with or what's encompassing these investigations, everything, and you have no idea unless you've been in law enforcement. And I know some people in the room have been. It is very difficult, and it's getting more difficult to professionally investigate crime and to get them into court and to get them to their proper disposition. Legislature meets every 2 years, and every 2 years the rules seem to change. You know, when I was coming up, we had things like like we could searching vehicles, things like this. If when we pulled them over, the person made what we used to be called furtive movements in the passenger compartment of the vehicle that we couldn't explain, lunging areas, it was also referred to, we had the ability to search the vehicle. Now we don't have things like that anymore. Those kind of things are being taken away from us, and the reason for that is because of, and I don't want to ramble, and I don't want to go on and on, but I'm not going to give you a song and dance about how I think our hands are tied or how I think that this has affected that. What I'm going to say is that it's not as easy to go ahead and do some of the things that we used to do just based on the political climate and the changes between when I was coming up in the 90s and where we are here today in 2021. But to be more direct with you, I think that the sheriff answered your question about as good as it can be, where we call it consensual dialogue. If you've ever heard that expression before, we will actually, if we see somebody riding a bicycle, walking, and you're right, Brady does have a lot of pedicyclist and pedestrian traffic that happens overnight during the hours of darkness, and our officers are aware of that. And when they see somebody, we can ask, get out of the vehicle or stay in the vehicle, be safer to get out, and start a conversation with them. We can do that. That's the casual dialogue portion. I'm not asking them about a crime. I'm not asking them about anything, so I don't have to either Mirandize them or I don't have to suspect them of either having committed, are going to commit, or have committed a crime. So I can engage in casual dialogue. But if I don't have reasonable suspicion that gets me to probable cause, I can ask that person to identify himself. Does anybody in this room know if I'm encountering someone under the casual dialogue thought process? Are they required to identify themselves? No, they're not required to identify themselves. That's correct. I can't just walk up to anybody and just say, let me see your identification. Traffic stops different. Driving is a privilege. It's not a right. We all know that we have to apply for a driver's license. We have to sign on the back of that. We sign a form that says that we understand this is a privilege. And if I am stopped by a law enforcement officer, I am required to go ahead and provide my driver's license and proof of insurance. But if I'm just engaging in casual dialogue with somebody and having a conversation with them, even believing the things that Mr. Young brought up, worrying about, okay, that's called profiling, first of all, supposed to be against the law, racial or otherwise. But if it walks like a duck, if it talks like a duck, most of the time, you're just waiting for the quack. It is a duck. But there's only certain things that we can do. Now, maybe this casual dialogue will lead to information that will allow us to press further and start those building blocks to reasonable suspicion. Maybe. But if we don't get there, we don't have the right to require that person to identify themselves. The one thing that casual dialogue will do for us is it will establish that a person was in a certain place at a certain time. Now, most of us that are law-abiding citizens, we don't have any problems with giving our name to law enforcement. They may even understand the reason for our inquiry because, like the situation we just went through from January until early March, we're trying to solve crimes. We're trying to prevent crimes. And how do we do that? We do that by asking questions and trying to go ahead and rule people in as suspects or rule them out. That's just good investigative practice, but they're not required to identify themselves. I wish they were. I wish in the good old days, if we asked for your driver's license or a identification card or anything like that, it was given to us. That's not the case in 2021.
I guess the follow-up to my question is that I've had a little experience in law enforcement, and we got a lot of information with getting out of our car and talking to those people up on 17th Street at 3 o'clock in the morning. A lot, not so much maybe information on them, but information on other people. And I was just, you know, I live in the city. I watch things. I don't see that many cops out of their cars doing that. That's just my question to you.
No, I appreciate it. And I'll get into that, I think, as we move along here. Sir, can I ask you to wait just for one moment so I can kind of get the police side of this program going. Good evening. My name is Steve Thomas. I'm the current police chief here in Brady. And I know I think I said it a couple of minutes ago, probably one of the main reasons we're all here is a certain level of frustration. What I've been surprised about is I've seen that frustration go to just pure vindictiveness or meanness. And I want you to hear from me before I say anything else about what we're going to be talking about tonight. Is the law enforcement officers that you have working here, the Brady Police Department, and the ones you have working for the McCulloch County Sheriff's Office, is the best since I've been here. Hands down, no doubt about it. So when I get somebody, when I see some of these negative, again, I don't have Facebook. I don't have any need for people to know what I'm doing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But I do pay attention to it because I am curious and also a level of concern about what the public thinks about what we're doing, how we're doing it, what they think we can do to improve. But when it goes, in this case, from frustration to just outright, well, that police department can't solve anything, can't do anything. There are people there, I never see them. They're, no. No. And I'm glad for the opportunity tonight to go ahead and stand up and tell you and explain to you why those are ill-informed people. And those are people that it's easier to sit at a keyboard and fire off hot sports opinions about something they know nothing about rather than go ahead and become part of the solution and not part of the problem. I've got thick skin. I've been doing this last month. It was my 30th year in law enforcement. And I've had the privilege to serve four different communities during that time. This is my second community as a chief. And one of the things that I know more than anything is that, and I heard this statement a long, long time ago, and that's one of two things. You're either involved in law enforcement or you're involved in crime. You don't have to wear a badge and a gun. You don't have to go out there and police the community. You don't have to work in any portion of the group that handles criminal justice or the law enforcement in a city, county, state, anything like that. But you, 98% of the people out there, I think, are good people. You don't want crime, just like I don't want crime. But believe it or not, crimes don't occur in front of a big white vehicle that says police down the side of it. Okay, we have to rely on information, good, credible information. Is there a chance that the information won't be something that we can use to get them into a courtroom and to get them to get the case to the proper disposition, meaning a conviction, arrest and conviction? Maybe. You know, law enforcement, it's tough to make promises. But I can, one thing I can promise you is when you get involved and you provide us the information that we need to go ahead and make these arrests and subsequently prosecute these offenders in court and get to that disposition, that's what's required. I mean, there's a lot of television shows out there where the crimes are solved in an hour, and we can do it with a hair follicle, and we know exactly who it is, and we just go get them. It's not like that in the real world. It's really not. And when frustration that I see goes into basically having no confidence or nothing positive to say about your law enforcement, that deeply, because I know different. You understand? I know different. I know that those people sitting in the back of the room there are doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're doing their jobs. Regardless of what anybody else thinks or says. Let me give you some statistics, since everybody seems to be, you know, we hold those in high regard, and we want to know these things. I was just looking at unfortunately, I don't have 2020. I have 2019. 2020 is just being released, be available for release for law enforcement throughout the country. And I can expand on these things, but I don't want to make this all about my talking. I really do care about what your questions are and making sure we get those answered. But in 2019, they do these for every demographic in the city, in the state of Texas. And they start law enforcement agencies at over 200, with served populations over 250,000. They come all the way down to our area. And I was looking at, as I was looking over the numbers, I saw that for group six, and you can, if anybody wants to substantiate this or go back and look for yourself, please feel free to go to Federal Bureau of Investigation and look under 2019 crime statistics. First of all, property crimes are much harder to solve than persons crimes, and I think the reasons would be readily apparent to you. Property crimes normally occur when somebody's not home, or three things have happened. Something hasn't been hidden, locked and secured, kept out of sight, so plain view, I would say plain view, and it's readily available to somebody. There's nothing, I mean, we talk about in this line of work, and as long as I've been doing it, I hate to use the word hate, but I hate a thief. Somebody that will see your property and decide to prey upon it just simply because they can. Not because they're in need for it, not because of anything else other than they've got something, you have something that they want, and they're just going to take it. And maybe you don't have cameras, and maybe you don't have a large dog in your backyard or in your home, and you fall prey to this. Normally they occur by individuals, sometimes people working in concert, which is what we've had here in Brady. We've had people working together to go ahead and commit these offenses. But this was in 2019, and it gives you an idea. In our group, under 10,000 people, the clearance rate on crimes like this is 23.9%. And that's actually higher than most of the categories where the populations are much higher. In our situation here in Brady and McCulloch County, during the time frame that I was asked to compile this from, was basically from January 1st to March 1st. That's about the time frame that the majority of these crimes were being committed. And thanks to the hard work of the police department and the sheriff's office, many of those people that are responsible for these cases are already incarcerated right now, waiting for their opportunity to go to court and for us to present a package that would get the case to their proper disposition. Over that time period, we had a total of 27 burglary and theft cases. I don't know where the robbery stuff came from. We haven't had any armed robbery. I mean, what the newspapers, not our local newspaper, but other entities, we haven't had any aggravated robberies or anything like that. These all been property crimes, theft and burglary. Over the time period, we had 27 theft and burglary cases that happened over a relatively short time period. Well, obviously, the reactive arm of law enforcement has to start putting the pieces of the puzzle together. What I'm proud, absolutely proud, to tell you is we've already made 15 total arrests in reference to these 27 burglaries. Any of you with a calculator are really good at math. That's 55.5% clearance rate. I just told you that the national average for municipalities or areas our size was 23.9. So how are we not doing our jobs? How are we not putting the people that are responsible for these crimes, getting arrest warrants and placing them in custody? So we're roughly, almost triple the national average for places our size. And I'm not saying that for any other reason, because I think any crime, anybody in here, a crime victim, that's too much or too many. But to sit back and say that we're not doing anything is both irresponsible and incorrect. So I could go on and on about this because I have the statistics to back it up that any of you could look up. But I'm really more concerned about how you feel and what you want to know about the police department in particular. And I am always, and I don't mean this as fluff. I said it when I walked in here and interviewed, and I'll say it again here tonight. This police department belongs to you. Doesn't belong to the city manager. Doesn't belong to anybody. Certainly doesn't belong to me standing up here talking to you today. It belongs to you. The police department will function and perform in a fashion that's accepted by the majority of our residents and by the people that want us to be doing as many proactive things that we can do. And I just think that the way, and I very rarely get the opportunity to do something like this, is I get to speak with you directly. I love town halls because I'm ready for any question that you ask me, and I'm ready to give you an honest answer. I love these forums because it gives us an opportunity to meet on a level playing field and discuss issues that face this community and how we're going to go about addressing them and making sure that you understand the process that might entail. It's not like television, folks. It's different. And you have a really good crew of people here working as hard as they can for you. And they may not, this isn't a profession where you're getting a ton of pats on the back and people telling you you're doing a great job, and I don't think any of us do it for that. But we certainly, I think we deserve your respect and to know that we wouldn't be turning blind eye to criminal offenses and, we're just driving around willy-nilly with no plan in place. And there's just a way to do it. And we've already explained to you what a couple of the roadblocks are. But the people that you have wearing this uniform, I can promise you, are doing it the way we want it done. And I'm proud to serve with all of them. And I would hope that would be the prevalent sentiment of this community. So with all that being said, if anybody has any questions for me, please go ahead and step up and please give your name your question, and we'll just get it answered. Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry. I forgot about you. I rambled a little bit. I apologize. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Mark Mosley, and first off, appreciate you all being here.
Yes, sir.
Tonight and doing what you're doing, and we're here to understand and learn. It's always a learning experience for me. You might have touched on some of this, but I know we've had some extenuating circumstances here in the county the last year or so. And apparently there's like three levels of jurisdiction. There's a city, judge, there's a county judge, and a district judge. And perhaps it's been apparent that sometimes people at lower courts pay their bond and they're out, and it's been a while since they've been able to be brought to trial. How would, is that backlog being worked through, and maybe explain three different levels? I don't know exactly what that means. And a second question is, as a homeowner or a private citizen, and someone comes onto your property that they've not been invited, they are trespassing first. They're there without that. And then later they might break into a barn. They're in something else there breaking in without permission. And the third level of things is, as they break into your house as a private citizen, what actions are open to you, I guess, to deal with these three levels of invasion, perhaps? Again, thank you.
Yes, sir. Let me answer the second question first. I hope everybody in here knows that you have every right to protect yourself and your property, especially during the hours of darkness. The thresholds are a little bit different. When we can see, you know, let me give you an example. If you're in sound sleep, you're, you know, in your bed, you hear a noise, causes you to get up and react to it. I mean, you're, I don't think I have to explain to anybody in here. I think that, you know, when you wake up like that, it's startling and you're not sure what's going on and you're trying to process all these different things in your head. What I should do, do I need to, you know, go check it out? Do I need to call the police? What do I need to do? I want you, first of all, to make sure that we're clear that everybody has the right to protect themselves, up to and including the use of deadly force to protect that life and property. What I would tell you is, especially when you're waking suddenly in a situation like that, I think you need to react in accordance with what your abilities are. I think you should always call law enforcement first if you have the ability to do that. Let us know that you've heard a noise, you believe somebody's in your home, and you're asking for us to respond. That's one of the great things about Brady, and let's touch on this just because of the uniqueness of the question, is that, you know, at any given time here in the city, and I want to thank anybody that's here from the council. We won't recognize everybody, but there are several council members here. Last year, we, and going into COVID, obviously, which none of us expected or wanted, the city saw a need for us to be better staffed. The national average for police officers in any municipality is, depending on what you believe, 3.1, 3.2 officers per 1,000 residents. So when I got here, the number of officers we had was nine police officers. I think, as most of you know, we've entered into a interlocal agreement with the schools to do the SRO program and some other things. But there was a need because, first of all, an officer working by themselves is unsafe. We encounter things that you, and I don't want to tell stories or do whatever, but you wouldn't believe, everything comes, Brady is a hub. If you're trying to go one direction or the next, if you want to go toward San Angelo, Abilene, you want to go back through the middle of Texas and go up into Austin, I mean, we're just a natural hub here. We've encountered everything from Houston gang members. Mike Hudson knows exactly what I'm talking about. You know, at 2 o'clock in the, or no, it was earlier than that. It was probably about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. Just a carload of Houston certified, run their criminal history, run their driver's license, certified gang members swinging through Brady, Texas at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. I mean, one officer to encounter, Mike was lucky that night. Mike had was training officer, but those things happen way more than you can possibly imagine. Traffic stops are dangerous. It's one of the things that we do the most, but it inherently puts us, because we don't know, all this person knows is that we're a cop and we're going to be inquisitive, and they may want to give us that information or they may not. And so it could go really good, easy contact, hey, slow down a little bit, here's a ticket, whatever the disposition is. But the people that are responsible, have outstanding warrants, have issues, they don't want to be contacted by the police. So first of all, it's unsafe for an officer to work by themselves. Second of all, that while that traffic stop is going on, and we have, and that's been the case, over the time that I've been here, we have one officer working in after 2 o'clock in the morning, which I'm going to change the shift. So you can write that down, but we're not going to let the crooks know what we're doing and how we're doing. But at that time, up until 2 o'clock in the morning, hopefully we had two officers there, but then there'd only be one. So if that officer is making a traffic stop, or let's say it leads to an arrest, you know how long an officer traditionally is off the street after they've made an arrest? Any idea? Anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour. So from 20 minutes to an hour, basically this city would be unprotected. And I just think that's not good. We can do better than that. And thank goodness for the council. They recognize that shortfall or shortcoming and helped us rectify it. But up to this day, we still have 11 officers. We haven't increased our staff as of yet. We're working towards that. But the simple fact is you need, if that officer is down for an hour, who's looking out for our residences and looking out for our businesses and those kind of things? So we're in the, matter of fact, next week will be a big week for us because we're looking at hiring too. And that will get us just one below our allotment of 14 officers, which still falls below the national average. The question about, what was the second part of the question? I talked some. Yes, you were absolutely right. First of all, city, county, state, federal. So four different legs there. Just depending on, you know, and all that means is what court is this case going to be brought to? Who is going to be, who's going to hear the case? You know, those kind of things. You know, I don't have any, they have to do their job. Just, I focus on what we have to do. We have to develop information. We have to make arrests. We have to present good cases. When it gets to the, either, and let's keep the city court out of it, we'll just talk about county court and district court. They, you know, a person, we were talking about rights earlier, a person has the right to post bond under almost every circumstance. Now, where that bond is held, or, you know, what the level of the bond is or whatever, we don't decide that. Can we talk to the county attorney or the district attorney or these kind of things and maybe ask for certain things? Yes, we can do that, and I'm sure they take those kind of things under consideration. But for the most part, when a bond is set, every individual has the right to post bond. We have one person incarcerated right now that's responsible for three different burglaries or thefts, three separate incidences over that time span that I spoke with you earlier about, the January 1st to March 1st. Three different occasions, committed a theft or burglary during that time frame, got a bond, bonded out. Second crime, got a bond, bonded out. Third crime, got a bond, very pleased to tell you they're still there. But that's how it works. So, and sometimes people, they'll see somebody at large, well, I mean, not in jail, one day, and they may not even know an arrest is taking place. They may not even know that the process or the chain has started. Because I can assure you, an arrest is just the tip of the iceberg. We are the ones, with us, the courts, everybody, we're the ones that have to get it all the way down the chain to a proper, hopefully a proper disposition. But that's up to us. And that's why it goes back to the cases that we present and why we have to have probable cause to make arrests and why we have to be able to give our prosecutors the ability to go ahead and get a successful prosecution. I know people are frustrated. I don't think it's been anybody in this room, but I'm scanning it pretty hard. I know I've personally met with people that have said, here's the video. Here's the video right here. Now, the video may be inconclusive as far as what the person was doing at the time. And is this, in fact, the person that was there? I understand that frustration as well. But if it's not something that I can use to prosecute this person, then, you know, I have to look at other avenues. And it's frustrating on both sides. I wish we had the ability to do some of the things that you think we know we can do. I wish that more than anything, but that's not the case. Next.
Y'all were talking about the people late at night. You were talking about the people late at night riding bicycles, backpacks, whatever, that your hands are kind of tied on how you can approach them and what you can ask them. My question is why can't there some type of curfew be put in place to give y'all the ability to actually question these people like at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning?
Great question, and I'll give you a good answer, I hope. We've already done it. We have a curfew in the city for anybody under the age of 17 from 11 o'clock at night until 6 o'clock in the morning. It's a little bit different during the week than it is on weekends. But when you're an adult, we can't impose a curfew on you. That's why we were talking about when it looks like a duck, when it walks like a duck. You're absolutely right. We know what it looks like. But we know what it should look like. And those are the people that we do contact.
A lot of these people that are riding around on these bikes and stuff, they're not 17 years old. They're 22, they're 23, they're 30 years old.
That's correct.
So in other words, the curfew isn't going to do any good for them.
No, not, so for not the curfew that we have in place here. No, sir. It's not going to do any good.
Can it be upgraded to where it does include something like that? I mean, I understand people's got to go to work. There's people getting off that don't have automobiles and stuff that have to walk.
Yep.
And I understand all of this. What I'm saying is there any way that there's some type of curfew that can be put in place that a 22-year-old guy on his low-riding bicycle with backpack at 2 o'clock in the morning can be stopped by a police officer, a sheriff's department, and questioned what he's doing, where he's going, if he's coming from work, great. But if he's not...
Ordinance-wise, no, sir. If the state, remember we talked about the state meeting every 2 years and changing laws and amending them accordingly, unless the state were to come up with something, I don't think that will happen for the reason that I just explained. They're adults, and they have the rights
to be
out and about. That's what makes it so difficult, is we don't have the ability to take something, develop some reasonable suspicion into probable cause, then we don't have the ability to search that backpack. We don't have the ability to do certain things. Now, I will tell you that, you know, we have a young group here. We have a lot of experience on the top end and on the middle to lower ends. What they lack probably in field experience, they certainly make up for in their diligence and how they approach matters like this. I'm a firm believer that I would think as a community, you would want us to be aggressive as we possibly can be while still being professional. We should be asking the right questions. We should be trying to do those things, and we are. But we also have to know when we're not going to be able to get, we're not going to violate somebody's civil rights to do that. And I certainly wish that there was something that could be incorporated that will allow us to, if you're taking a backpack after 12 o'clock at night,
yeah.
You know, give us, hey, I would vote for that in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I understand that. I have one more question.
Sure.
You were talking about the privacy of property.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? I know in the county, you can purple the post on all four corners of your property, and it puts it into a no trespassing type deal. I realize neighbors are close. You're not going to go out here and do something like that. How does that stipulate the difference between someone coming onto your property at night and taking, let's say, a lawnmower that's sitting beside your house that you don't have covered up? Are they how do you know they're violating your the privacy of your property or getting on your property? The act of where does the line go? I guess what I'm trying to say is, where does it go that you know whose property it is and you're crossing onto it? If you're going down the street walking or driving, whatever, and you see the lawnmower and you get out to go get it, have you violated that person just then by going on their property?
Yes. The quick answer to your question is absolutely. And in circumstances like that, we would file the highest level offense, which would normally be the loss of the lawnmower. So we would file, but we would also, obviously, if there's a theft that occurs that, from an item that's on your property, person had a criminal trespass to be able to get that item. So I think that would be inherent as part of the disposition of the case, that there, he couldn't have come across this lawnmower any other way. It was left here, now it's gone. So that person, you know, should not have come on your property, correct, lawfully.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
On what you were just talking about, it's not important that that person knows whose property he's on. It's only important that he knows that it's not his property. So that's what is important in that case, is he knows it's not his property when he goes on it and knows it's not his lawnmower that he's taking from that property. So in those circumstances, we're okay. Now, we talked about the man riding a bicycle with the backpack. Now, when we catch him out there on the streets, he's going to be all nervous and everything, and he's obviously he's going to be guilty of whatever's in that backpack and whatever he's been doing. Now, when we get into court, the story's going to be that he was coming from a midnight Bible study. He found the backpack laying on the street and was taking it to the police department to turn it in. And he has no knowledge of what's in that backpack, including the drugs and the stolen property and the gun. So that's what we're up against. We have a burden of proof. We have to prove that that stuff in that backpack is his, he knew what was in it, and that he was not coming from the Bible study that he claims, and everything. So this is what we're up against a lot of times. When we catch somebody like this, we have a burden of proof to prove that it is his backpack and he knew what was in it. He's in possession of it. And so that helps us a lot. But we have a burden of proof to proving up cases. It's not, like you said earlier, it's not like it was on TV. It's a case of we have to prove these things and we have to write our reports. Went from, used to, there was a day when you could write a half-page report and turn that in and get case would get prosecuted. Nowadays, it takes about a 10-page report to get it prosecuted. So our job has changed considerably. I've been in law enforcement for 42 years, and it has changed considerably in 42 years. And so on that regard, you know, we're having to evolve with this change. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
My name's Fritz Hartkopf. I've got one question. Now, this is secondhand, but I've questioned the man two or three times about it. His place, his house was robbed, over $2,000.
It was burglarized?
Sir?
Burglarized, or he was robbed?
Well, burglarized. Okay.
Just making sure I was clear.
Okay. And I said, okay, they did replace for him. I said, what, they take notes or anything? He said, they didn't write a single thing down. How's the police report get wrote when they don't take any notes?
I find that, I certainly don't know you or know the man, sir. I find it hard to believe we would respond to a burglary and not take any notes.
I questioned the man three times. Today, I questioned him again.
What I would ask of you, if you would for me, is have that, which is, well, you know, probably don't want to divulge the name. Have that person call me, you know, hopefully this makes sense, and I'm glad you asked the question. We don't pick and choose where we respond to. We don't say, oh, that's over on Oak Street. Oh, we're not going there. Yeah, that's, we've been over there a few times today. We're not going back over there. That's not how it works.
Okay.
You call us, we show up. If there is probable cause or there is all the elements of a criminal offense are present, the officer is going to document that whatever the situation is, whether it be theft, burglary, or anything else. So we don't pick and choose also, just like we don't pick and choose what we respond to, we don't pick and choose whether we write a report or we don't. The only reason we wouldn't write a report that I can tell you off the top of my head would be if the elements of the offense didn't add up. But, you know, something like that. And here's my argument. If you have an issue with something that we do or don't do, please call me directly. I'm easy to find. Please call me directly and ask me, why did your officer not take a report under this circumstance? Or why did this happen? Rather than go out on Facebook and fire off a hot sports opinion about how we're not doing our job, give me the opportunity to go ahead and look at it and bring you into that investigative look, and we'll figure out why something did or did not happen. So what you're telling me at face value, I would have a tendency to, just because, you know, I know the department, I know my department, I would say there's something else to that. And I would encourage this individual to go ahead and call me. Please take into account, I love this, and I don't know whether y'all love it too, but I'm just going to say it. Every officer that works in the city of Brady has a body camera. Okay? So about, and I want to tell you that has helped us way more than it's hurt us. Because there are people out there that feel exactly, there are people in this room that I know feel exactly about us the way it was articulated on Facebook. And what they don't remember, or they don't realize, is that we have a video too of that circumstance. So when people have over time come in and told me, well, this officer was rude and this officer XYZ, I invite them in to sit down with me and watch the body cam footage. And then I ask the question, could you show me, could you tell me at what point you were either offended or the officer said something that was, you know, off color or out of line or belittled you or anything? And it's not present. So then the story changes. Well, it was the other officer. That officer has a body cam too. Okay? So I don't want to tell you that what you've been told was a lie, because I think that would be inappropriate. But what I would ask is you have that person call me, because telling you does nothing. Yeah. All it does is perpetuate a bad situation that can't be taken care of unless it's something that comes to me or the supervisory staff of the police department.
Yeah, another thing. You mentioned only one officer on duty, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Don't you have a supervisor on duty, too?
Yeah, yes, that supervisor was on duty.
Okay. You'll have 2 guys on duty then?
Yes. Okay. But I'm not, again, I'm telling you what the time frame was for that particular time frame.
Yes.
But we're going to end up changing it because too many people, I think, know what time our shift changes are and what we're doing and how we're doing it. So we're just going to flip the script a little bit.
Okay. He had backup then on the road. Since he had a supervisor, he did have somebody there. Yes. That could take in for him.
Since January 1st of 2021, there's always somebody working for the sheriff's office, and there's always somebody working with the police department.
Okay.
And now more than ever, we have the ability to have an officer would have a backup, where in the past they may not have. Thank you for the question.
Good evening. My name is Wayne O'Brien. I have a couple of questions. How many men, you said you had 11 officers right now, correct?
Right now I have 11 officers.
And how many supervisors do you have?
3.
3.
Not counting the sergeants that
okay.
are on each shift.
So do you have, that's a total of 5 supervisors, correct?
That's correct.
So 5 supervisors for 6 officers.
No, but you're looking, this is now with the new staffing. I don't know why you're smiling like it.
Well, you said no, and the math adds up.
We haven't had the chance to go ahead and get to our fully staffed level.
Okay, so you'll have 5 supervisors for 8 officers, correct?
We'll have a patrol lieutenant. We'll have a sergeant over each rotation. We'll have a patrol supervisor that was recently created for this budget year to go ahead and better handle just the patrol-specific things that occur. We have a captain that investigates the majority of our more high-profile, more difficult crimes to investigate, crimes against children, the elderly, sexual assaults, and those things, and then there's me.
Okay, so what is your supervisor-to-officer ratio total?
When we're fully staffed, and we have 14 officers, we'll have 3 command staff officers, 1 sergeant per rotation, and then we'll have 4 officers under each rotation.
Okay. Have what?
We have 2 animal control officers, and we have 2 civilian staff as well.
Okay. I wasn't talking about... Do you believe that patrol deters crime, the patrol units?
Yes.
How many days have you and your supervisors, not counting the sergeants, been out on patrol in the last 30 days?
Every day.
you're out on patrol every single
day. Not physically, no. I am not out on patrol every day. But whenever we have an incident that needs more than one person to respond, I am certainly available and will respond.
That wasn't my question, sir. My question was
you're trying to start an argument.
No, sir. I am not.
Go in that direction.
No, I am not.
I don't care. Let me tell you this so everybody can hear me. I don't care what your views are on our staffing and how you feel about it. We know what works here in Brady, and we know where we're trying to go. You don't. You think that you do, but you do not. So I just wanted to make that clear.
That's fine. I understand that. However, do you agree that patrol deters crime?
I answered the question once.
Okay.
And I said yes.
Okay. So would more patrol help?
Absolutely.
So, okay.
But let me make this caveat that the council has been very good to us in my time here and has been giving us staffing positions based on what they see the need is. It's not the 90s or the 2000s anymore. It's different now.
Correct.
And they can see that officer safety was a concern. And they can also see that we do have a need. If one person, the way it was, the way it had been here, I just explained to everybody what it's like to have a person off the street for an hour. Not just having fun or doing nothing. They just made an arrest. And now they're having to go ahead and do all the booking and everything that comes from that arrest. So they're doing their job, but it does leave the city unprotected. So absolutely, I mean, anybody that's been in law enforcement, I know that you have been, will tell you that the number of boots on the ground will directly correlate to your ability to solve crimes more easily and more quickly.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Hi.
Hi, my name's Kelly. I actually really understood where he was coming from, and I know you didn't want to hear it, but I thought it was a valid question for some of us, because not to dog the police department, you guys have more junk to go through than I would ever want anybody to go through. And Brady's pretty red, and so I know most people know what I mean with that, but I rarely see officers on patrol. No complaint at you. I don't know your job. I don't know your thing. I just don't see them, and I agree that deterrence is a very big deal. And my question in relation to that would be, we have been up here all night talking about what we can't do. And it does suck. We want to do those things. You want to do those things. It's unfair, but we can't. I'd be interested in hearing what we can do to be proactive, whether it's more patrols, more lighting, a better handle on the drug problem, more employment for these teenagers, more things for them to do. There has to be something that we can do on the front end to prevent some of these things coming in your lap on the back end.
That's awesome, and I 1,000% agree with you. What we can do is we can, I want people, I mean, I can say it, people, I'm just saying that. I'm not just saying this. We want to have an open line of communication with the people that we serve. We want to be approachable. We want to be professional. We want to develop information. We want to lead them to the proper disposition. But a lot of this we can't do without. We can't do without, and I'm going to talk about Crime Stoppers here in a moment, because Aaron Sosa, the president of the organization, is here. And I'll just say this. We need your help in solving crimes like the criminal episode. I called it a criminal episode because it was consistent, and we didn't know until the very end that there were people working in concert with others to go ahead and commit these crimes. But we'll put the puzzle together. If you'll just give us the information, you may not get a reward from it. It may not be something that comes out like that. But information is what solves crimes. Somebody being willing to say, no, I saw that person. That's the person I saw. And then be willing. Matt talked about a statement, you know, video or audio, doesn't make any difference. Just something that where it's not hearsay. Like the gentleman that got up and talked about, well, why wasn't a report taken? Yeah, I know a friend told him that, and whatever. I don't know why the friend would say something like that if it didn't occur. I'd like to really solve that one for you if that person will call me. But anything that you're told is called hearsay. If you don't have personal knowledge, if you didn't see it, if you didn't hear it, if you weren't there, that makes that information, it doesn't make it in and of itself not credible, but it certainly doesn't help us in a courtroom when you're asked directly, well, did you see here? Well, no, I didn't. It was told to me from somebody else. That's what hurts us. Or it doesn't hurt us. It just doesn't help. I wish Crime Stoppers was more well used. Again, I'll talk to Aaron, can speak to that. What Crime Stoppers is not, and just so since I have this forum, what Crime Stoppers is not, it's not a tool to be used to tell us about what's happening right now. Because nobody is monitoring, nobody from the police department is monitoring that. Nobody from the sheriff's office, I don't believe, is monitoring it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So a tip about, hey, there's a large party, or hey, this guy just came in here and he had a gun, or this, you know, this was said or whatever, that information should be called directly to the dispatch center over at DSO. The Crime Stoppers information is more so exactly like we experienced the last couple months, and that is crimes where there may be a bitter piece of information that might lead us to the next, to solving it maybe after the next crime or something. You know, people, and I'm going to give you all a lot of credit in this. I've talked to a lot of you, and you said the reason why we didn't call the police department was because we know that you're busy and we didn't want to bother you. We know you got other things going on. The great thing about calling us and letting us respond and document what we see and hear from you when we get there is it may not solve your crime, but it may solve the crime that happens down the street, which now gets lumped into your crime. And most of the time, those of you with some law enforcement background, I think you would admit, when it comes to property crimes, you solve one, you solve several. Because it's the same people normally looking for the same things. So I think opening the line of communication, better use of Crime Stoppers, people being willing. I did take note of, you know, the lighting situation. You know, would be nice if it was a little bit brighter in town. What it's going to take is it takes trust, too. You know, I see the comments, and like I said, we are doing what we can. We are doing the best that we think we can do. But we can always, you know, I talk about the public's trust. Let's say we earned it yesterday. Let's say we did something and everybody's like, champ, yeah, great job, Brady PD, or great job, McCulloch County SO. You know, that's awesome. So we earned your trust for one day. Guess what? We got to come back and earn it the next as well. We just don't get a flyby because we earned it one day. We strive to earn it every day. But the way that's done is that, you know, through inquiries, I love town hall forums like this where you get to go ask whatever you want, and I better have an answer for you or tell you, I'm sorry, I don't know. Let me go back and research that, and I'll get back with you. Can I call you or whatever? But this is your police department. And I understand the level of frustration, but we can fix it together. We can have a lot of you. Well, not people in there. When I say you, I don't mean the people in this room. I mean anybody here, anybody watching, any community member, business owner, whatever. Be willing to help us with information, whether it's something that will pan out immediately or not, and let us do what we do. Let us start putting the pieces of that puzzle together and start digging, and hopefully we're walking alongside you in a courtroom someday, and we're holding the offender accountable, getting your property taken care of or whatever the situation may be, and getting the case to the proper place it needs to be.
And a quick follow-up just on the hearsay
sure.
topic. I have two real quick questions. One of them is, do you call the county to get help with the city?
Yes.
Okay, because I've heard that and it made no sense, so I wanted to verify. And
2018, that changed. We had dispatch until October the 1st, 2018, and when the new Criminal Justice Center was built, it was changed. So, yes, county.
And I know that it may be the county, I'm not sure who it was, but I see posts on Facebook where they put up the perpetrators or the alleged people who did these crimes and what they've been arrested for, and like monthly. And it's really helpful to me because I need to know who I know that I might not want to know. And does the city do something like that also so that we might be aware of, hey, I know him, he runs with a bunch of these people, maybe I can be more informed and take a better proactive stance at looking for things?
The quick answer is no, we don't do that. The better answer is that anybody that's incarcerated in the McCulloch County Sheriff's Office, regardless of which agency, could be DPS, us, the county, Texas game warden, could be anybody. Anybody that's incarcerated at that facility, their picture is posted
included
with the charge that's been levied against them.
Awesome. That's good. I know you're not a big Facebook fan because people, you know, talk things that can't get answered or, you know, but in a small town like this, there's a lot of elderly people. A lot of people don't get out much, and that's really how we get our news. The newspaper comes a week after the news has happened, so I feel like the more presence y'all have on Facebook will give us answers and reduce that level of hearsay and misinformation.
I think I may be able to help you there, too, because we recently hired the second administrative person that we just talked about, and she's pretty darn good at Facebook. I am not. I just couldn't see the time that it takes me to do it is taking time away from other things. So now having somebody on staff that will do that, I think you're absolutely right. I think we need to do a better job of pushing that type of information out there so people know. But I agree. Thank you so much. Sure. Mona?
I'm not going to ask the question, Chief. I'm going to make a little statement. Y'all have all known me. Matt's known me for a long time. I knew him whenever he was a ranger before he became the sheriff here. The thing of it is, folks, they've only got one set of eyes. And whenever they go out on an incident to look around, they can only see what they can see. They depend on you, the community, to give them that information. Now, when you call in, that gives them the right to come out and look. If they see somebody that you have seen, and you give them the description of that vehicle or the description of that person and a possible incident that has taken place, then they have reasonable cause to stop and question. And I'll give you a real close incident at my house. I had been two individuals in a pickup truck come in. One got out. I was in my office. I walked outside and I asked them, "Can I help you?" That individual stopped and started backing up toward the car. Well, I noted the description of the vehicle and the license number and what he was wearing. They took down my mailbox whenever they tore out of my driveway to get out of there. I called the sheriff's office and gave them that information. About 3 or 4 hours later, I got a call that they were arrested in Eden, and they were wanted for burglary in San Angelo, burglary of a residence. They were scoping out my house to come back that night and do what they do. Now, that by the same incident, by the same notice, you have to be willing to testify. I got a call from San Angelo, from the DA up there, that they had pled out. So I didn't have to go to court. But I was damn sure willing to go to court on them. And if you're not willing to go to court on them, you're tying their hands. They cannot do their job out there. I'm a retired Texas game warden. I worked for 20 years in the county of Presidio. Now, I don't know whether many of you know where that is or not, but that's 50 miles from Mexico, Big Bend country. I lived out in the brush out there. The ranchers would call me, and I saw more cases from the ranchers calling me, giving the information on a pickup or somebody that had shot a deer on their property, tore down their fence or whatever, and I'll stop them. I had the right to stop them then and question them, and usually I found the deer. So you've got to get involved, folks. If you don't, this deal right here is not going to do very much. It's your community, and they work for you. And if you don't want to get involved with them, your community is going to suffer. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. Ms. Sosa, do you want to get up here and talk at all about Crime Stoppers? Are there any other questions before I hand the microphone over to Aaron? And while I'm waiting for Mr. Sanchez to get up here, I want to tell you that I absolutely meant everything that I told you tonight. We want to earn your trust. We want to earn your respect. We want to do it on a daily basis. The only way we can do that is if you'll give us an opportunity to do it. And prove me, I guess I shouldn't say it like that. let me show you, or let us show you, that the things that we talked about tonight are the way it is, and we do want your help and your trust. And prove me wrong. I encourage any of you to, and I want to know about things, officers not taking reports, things like that, because I don't know there's a problem. I can't fix something that I don't know about, but I will guarantee you about 98% of the time, what's proven out is there maybe there was a miss, some confusion in the communication that took place at the scene or whatever. We want to do things correctly. We want to do them the right way, and we want to make you proud to be a Brady resident or a business owner or a homeowner. We just want you to know that we feel like we have a partnership and a responsibility to you, and it's important that you hear that from me. So if there's any questions, oh, Mr. Sanchez, sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just want to make some statements and then a couple of questions.
Okay.
And most important is that whenever I have a problem, I do call, and I get very good response from the police department, usually within 3 to 4 minutes. And the sheriff's department, just recently, a few days ago, I had some people burglarizing and out in the county, and it was the second situation for the same group of people, but the deputy was tied up at doing another burglary investigation, so I didn't get a response. There was no DPS in the area, no game ward, nothing, so they left. I had a person watching the property, but we do need more surveillance. And in the past, I left Brady. I grew up in Brady. Brady, when I left here in 1973, was a very nice community, low crime, good place to live, a lot of business. I came back home nearly 30 years later, and the community had changed. There's a lot of crime, hardly any business, economy's bad. And recently, the crime has gotten worse. And I see people frustrated, just as you spoke. And the frustration is that, as the chief has stated, the laws have changed. You can't just pick a person up. You can't just question them. But there are ways to apprehend these people. And it's not cheap. We need to upgrade this county. We have good people. But in order to upgrade, it's going to cost money. And I left Brady here, and my ambitions were to go with NASA, go to the moon. I had a person I worked for, Mr. Finley, at the Brady Monument. His son-in-law was a head engineer for LTV Corporation. They were in charge of the NASA space program. I had good people to look up to, even right here in McCullough County. But with that, in the 1980s, I got into doing research and development for the Department of Defense. And most of that was doing surveillance units, combat type things that with the fighter jets, robotics. Those things that I studied back then are being used today, and they will catch people. But you're going to have to be looking at a tax increase. It's not on our budget, and it can't be bought just through economic development income. There's technology out there with using the drones, and I'm not talking about the little drones you're going to buy at Walmart. These drones are like what was used in the 1990s. They've been upgraded. You'll see the military drones. And I'm not talking about something as drastically and as big as that. You need a medium-sized drone, something like a helicopter with the sensors. There are sensors out there, heat units. They'll tell you exactly what that man got in his backpack. You got surveillance units on those drones for night vision. These people can't go out at night because there's not enough of them. The crime has increased to the point there's not enough law enforcement here. You need help. And the only way you're going to get it is to spend money to get the daggum equipment they need. And I can tell you right now, I've been in the county right before I came home. I've always bought property. I get involved with economic development. And eventually they come down to law enforcement because you have to be involved in all those situations in order to save your property, keep the crime down, and keep your property values. but I've seen it to where the crime is so bad that people can't sleep at night because people are breaking into the house, and it's happening right here in Beatty. It's not as bad as the county I just came from before I moved home, but in that county, public officials were dealing drugs because the drug activity had gotten so bad that there was enough money to pay off public officials. Many public officials were arrested in that county, and we don't want it to get that bad here. It's better to spend the money, get the technology we need. We need drones to fly around from one place to another. And
I don't mean it, Mr. Sanchez, I don't mean to cut you off, but you said you had a couple of questions, and
yes,
I know we're running a little
bit late. My question is, and I've heard people talk about, we need citizens on patrol. Why can't we get that?
We certainly could. We certainly could. Those of you that have never heard of it before, there's a program called Citizens Police Academy. I don't know how many people here might be interested in attending something like that. I guess what we do is we kind of pull the veil back a little bit. We kind of show you how we do, why we do, what we do. And it's normally between 8 and 10 weeks, and it teaches you, we teach you. First of all, it's great because we're not just badge numbers anymore. Now we're meeting on a level playing field. You weren't stopped because your right foot was a little bit heavy or for any of the situations that we're talking about tonight. It gets us for you to get to know us on a more personal level, and we obviously get to know you. And then we kind of take you through everything that we do on a daily basis. We show you everything from, you know, how to do certain things, how we do building searches, how we investigate crimes, how we collect physical evidence. We haven't done one here yet, but we would ask the county offices and the district offices to be involved so they could kind of tell you more about the law and more about some of the thresholds that have to be met and things like that. And normally at the end of that time frame, there's if people enjoyed it, some people, let's be honest, maybe it's not for everybody, but for some people that want to be involved in something like that, what we do is we ask them would they be interested in forming an alumni association. Normally that becomes something like a 501(c), where it's their own entity. We don't have any control over it, but what it does is it allows us, and to show you how it's worked effectively in the past, in one municipality that I worked in, we had an elderly person go missing, and we started the phone tree, called our alumni graduates, because part of the class is showing them how to search, spiral searches, grid searches, things along that nature. And we had, I want to say, like 9 people showed up in less than 20 minutes to go ahead and help us physically go out, help us like basically double our staff to go out and search for this gentleman. And they recovered him. It wasn't somebody from the police department. It was from that alumni association. And then I think it's important, I think you would agree, that, you know, some people, if we say, you know, please don't do this, there are some people out there that would still do it. So those last eight or 10 weeks that we spend together, we spend time getting to know you, what your disposition is like, your attitude towards law enforcement, and, are you the kind of person that we can trust with a police radio and to go out there and be our eyes and ears in certain, you know, portions of the community, things like that. And I'm proud to say that I started the one in Copper's Cove in, see, I left there in 2000, I want to say 2010 or 11, and no, earlier than that. And they're over 25 years strong with 50 plus members that do exactly that. They're a support system for not only the police, but also for the sheriff's office and things as well. So if we could get there, I would love to see a Citizens on Patrol type of program that would allow you to, We would love to help. We would love people that just had a radio and could report something that didn't look good. I think also before we go tonight, you know, those of you that might be interested in your community, your areas in the community, that might be interested in neighborhood watch programs. We actually had one about 3 years ago that was pretty successful and effective. It doesn't cost anything. And we attend your meetings if you'd like us to, and we answer questions, kind of like a smaller forum like we're having tonight. We would love to do those things. But, you know, we need you, if you are interested in things like that, to let us know. You know, we would certainly, you know, try to facilitate those things.
Thank you, Chief. I think that's a good way to get the community involved, and that way we get good response towards eliminating the crime. The other question I have is, when will our county upgrade to the 21st century technology of using drones? I mean, that's the best way to go, because you don't have enough manpower to fight this crime. We need the surveillance from the air to get this thing over with and lock these people up. That's what the jail was built for, and we added extra money to build a bigger jail. We need to put a stop to the crime.
Well, with what you're talking about is we're talking about a lot of money to buy the drones. We have one of the small drones at the sheriff's office at present. It is used for very limited purposes, but the drones that you're talking about are larger, and the bigger they get and the more that they do, the more expensive they become. And so that is a problem for the taxpayers. I mean, because right now the expense of, we're still paying on a jail that is, I know at the time we built it, we said, well, that jail will never fill up. Well, that jail is filling up quickly. So, well, like I said, when I took office just a few months ago, we were at 35 or so, and we're up to 51 right now. So, and I do not condone setting bonds. That's the judge's responsibility. So I have nothing to do with setting the bonds. My job is to hold those prisoners, and it's in the state constitution. My job is to house prisoners for the county. And so that's what we do. We house them until they can post the bond as set by a magistrate, which is just the peace, or the county judge, or a municipal judge. So that's what we're doing. We're just housing them. We're not helping them get out or anything like that. If they want out, they can do it on their own. Let me just say real quick one other little thing. I got a call, it's been probably a couple of weeks ago, from a person. Used to we would call them an informant. Nowadays it's a cooperating individual. So I got a call from a cooperating individual, and this person told me, said, I know that I'm a meth head and I know that I use drugs, but said, these other people that are doing these burglaries are giving us a bad name. And this individual commenced telling me who was doing some of these burglaries, and the information that I got led to an arrest. So if I get information like that, if we could get everybody to give us this kind of information, I'd be doing great. So, but we laugh about it, but I appreciated the information. So I'll take it from wherever I can get it. So if you've got information, call me. So.
Well, Sheriff, that's my last question, and I do hope, I mean, there are grants available for that kind of technology that I speak about, and you can put together a unit. I would say I proposed one back in the Iraq War, the first war, for around $50,000, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But, I mean, nowadays it would cost more money, but when you stop and look at the manpower, you know, when you stop and look at the price tag on payroll for three or four people, and then this thing's flying around that can go around the county with the fuel and save the patrolman and keep them in town or wherever you need, you know, the feasibility is there. You're going to have to just look and find some bargains and find some grants. But I think that's really what our country is going into. It's 21st century technology will be robotics.
Okay. Thanks. We'll look at that. Yes.
Hey. Mr. Mosley, I wanted to answer your question real quick. My name is Mark Marshall. I'm the county attorney, McCulloch County, since a while back, 2007. I think your question specifically was what was being done at each level in terms of the actual prosecution of the cases, maybe a timeline for that. You know, I commend everybody for coming tonight. I think everybody here recognizes that we have a lot of issues. Most of the issues aren't unique to Brady or McCulloch County, drugs and property crimes and these types of things. But I think identifying where we can improve is huge. I appreciate the chief and the sheriff being here. I can tell you this. First of all, there's no shortage of of cases being filed, okay? So everybody knows, well, there's a lot of burglaries or there's a lot of thefts occurring, but there's no shortage of cases being filed. Our office gets a large amount of intake on cases. I know the DA gets a large amount of intake on cases. So in terms of cases that are getting reported, that are ending up in a report, that are ending up in my office or Tanya's office, those cases are getting filed, which is the job of law enforcement, is to create cases that we can accept and that we can move forward with. So from that standpoint, that job is getting done. So what happens once the cases are filed? And part of that is my responsibility as it pertains to Class A and B misdemeanors. Felonies, obviously, Tanya does. But, you know, here's the short answer to a really complicated issue is a bond is set for each of these cases. And if the bond is made, and that's based on the level of the case, so if it's Class A misdemeanor, that's what the bond amount set at. If it's a Class B misdemeanor, that's what it's set at. And if the person bonds out, the bond is only designed to ensure that that person appears at court. And so the real kicker to get to move cases and to be able to process these cases faster is to have court. Well, we are on, I think, Supreme Court Edict Number 33 from the Supreme Court on all the ways that we can't have in-person court. And that is a real challenge that we're having to deal with. So we're having to have Zoom court when we've been able to have a county judge. Right now, we have a new judge that's been appointed, and we have a judge in Mason County that's been filling in for the period of time that we have not had a judge, which really has been from about July until now, which is in the middle of when we've had a lot of these increase in cases. So at that point, we have to have court via Zoom with the judge that we can find on the docket that we can put together. So I don't know how many of you have participated in Zoom court. I've done lots, including today and lots of other days. And so the very initial cases that we went through were individuals that had been appointed attorneys or that had hired attorneys, because that way you have an attorney for the criminal defendant to help them get on to Zoom so we can have court. We worked through a lot of those into the point where now we have pro se litigants, which means people that don't have attorneys. So now we're sending out Zoom meeting messages to have these non-represented criminal defendants get on their iPhone to have Zoom court to then make offers on pleading the case out or some type of situation to then get documents to these criminal defendants who don't have attorneys who are on their iPhone in court. I'm happy to tell you that our last Zoom hearings with non-represented people, I think a higher percentage of the people attended than when we have in-person court. And I think we moved more cases in that Zoom hearing than I ever expected to. And so a lot of which pled out on those types of cases. So those things are moving and they're happening, but it's not at a pace that I'm super happy with. You know, I wish I could tell you I was satisfied with it. I'm not. I wish I could tell you that I'm doing the best that we can. We're probably not. You know, there's plenty of room for improvement where I'm standing right now. And the bottom line is all I can tell you is we're working hard to get better. You know, we've got a new judge in place. We've got lots of court dates coming in. We have a lot of catch-up to do on that. But that only applies to Class A and B misdemeanors. You know, the felony courts have been going for, every single felony defendant, all of them have an attorney. So there's somebody that can coordinate getting somebody on a Zoom. And so their ability to have court, and they have a judge that's been in place for years, so their ability to have court is, you know, definitely ongoing, more so than ours. We have a lot of court dates. We've been having Zoom court. I think it's been somewhat successful. One other thing before I shut up. The big problem with the property crimes really is drugs. Okay? Drugs and mental health, but really drugs. you know, Mr. O'Brien asked some questions about supervising officers and so forth. Let me tell you something. We're woefully inadequate, probably, in terms of our ability to deal with mental health issues from a transport, from a county perspective, from an MHMR perspective. And in addition to seeing the backpackers all around our streets, you know, we have a tremendous amount, disproportionate to our population, of mental health problems. And if you've been an officer, you know, I can tell you those guys have to go to the hospital. They wait for MHMR to maybe show up. We get a commitment where a judge signs an order for somebody to go get evaluated, maybe in Wichita Falls, maybe in Austin. And so we have one of our law enforcement personnel from McCulloch County driving all the way to Wichita Falls to do an intake so they don't accept the person, and then they have to drive them all the way back. Meanwhile, that person's not able to patrol our streets, not able to do a lot of the reports. So that's an issue that we're having to deal with in terms of, you know, unfunded mandates. The state has all these requirements and all these, you know, and it doesn't help to gripe about it, but you need to know, you know, mental health's a big issue. Drugs are another issue. And the bottom line is, I'm pleading people out that have been in jail for 120 days on Class B misdemeanors, max punishment 180 days. You know, I'm sorry if somebody steals something from you and you have restitution, and this guy's unemployed, walking around on with a backpack and a deal, he's going to sit in jail. You're not going to get any money back. You know, I don't have anything other than jail to offer. And most of the time, it's for the full amount of time. You know, so these aren't people I'm able to put on probation. But the bigger issue is, a lot of those individuals may have a meth case. Well, you know, Steve and Matt can tell you, but the bottom line is, if it's a state jail first offender meth case, guess what? They're not going to prison anyway. It's a probation only. That's what the law is. So it's a probation only offense first time that they get convicted of a felony meth case, a certain amount, possession of controlled substance. So now we've arrested the person. We've gone through appointing a lawyer. There's probably a couple companion misdemeanor cases. We do what's called 1245 in that case, which means we let that case misdemeanor be taken into consideration on the felony, and then they're usually put on felony probation. And then if they violate the felony probation and they're arrested again, then they're able to be sent to prison. But if they sat in jail for 90 days before we ever did anything, after the third time they missed the bond, guess what? They're going to get all the back time that they're legally entitled to from the first two arrests when they plead to the state jail. So before, you know, and you know, Matt and those guys at the jail, they can verify this, before they're even picked up by TDC, you know, they're already almost parole eligible, not on a state jail felony because there's no parole, but on a third degree felony, they're almost parole eligible before they ever pick them up. And so the bottom line is, I understand the frustration. I'm frustrated. I live here. You know, out of your county tax dollars, you know, we collect about an $8 million budget. About a quarter of that is law enforcement, sheriff and jail. You know, that's about $2 million. The PD's budget's about $1.5 million. I don't even include our office budget in there. Either, just so you know. So it's a large percentage of what we're spending. And, you know, 5 years ago, we had a 17-capacity jail. 17-capacity. And now we have 48 beds.
We're 66. We're in a 66-bed facility. Once we get above 48, we have to have two jailers on the floor. Anything 48 and below, we can do it with one jailer. And we're at the point now where we have to have two jailers on the floor.
So, you know, they send out a jail log. We get it. We look at our documents and our information with the jail log on a, you know, much more than weekly basis. You know, last time I looked was not yesterday, and it was at 46 beds or 46 people in jail. 46 people. We have a 66. I'm willing to bet within 60 days, there's 60 people in jail, which means now we're at full capacity. And, you know, everything's designed to try to get people off the street that are committing the crimes. And it's a difficult process. I don't blame anybody for being frustrated. You know, like I said, I'm frustrated. I can tell you this. It's not because cases aren't being investigated, certainly not because they're not being filed. And I think we are trying to get them prosecuted. You know, the deck stacked against us. We have, you know, all the problems of bigger towns with less resources to deal with them. You know, we have all the same MHMR, the same drug problems, a lot of the same issues, and we have less resources. And the bottom line is, I understand Joe's deal about, hey, can't we just arrest somebody or make a curfew? You know, the bottom line is, nobody likes paying the taxes that we're paying right now. They don't want to add up another couple million a year for a civil rights violation. I will say this. I watch a lot of videos, a lot of officer videos. I wouldn't do the job that they do. They're, you know, I commend them, and I'm very proud of our law enforcement. I get sometimes people give complaints and this and that. From what I've watched, I'd say the last 5 years, I've seen nothing but professionalism in the videos. Can't tell you how many awful, rude people come into contact with our law enforcement. And I mean terrible stuff. And, you know, people being accused of racism, all sorts of things that you wouldn't deal with in a business, you wouldn't deal with in any other situation other than these are public servants. And I'm really proud of what I see on the videos. You know, we're so busy, I don't call Steve and say, you know, I watched the stop out there and saw a video, and, you know, the officer did a really great job. You know, I feel bad. I'm too busy. Everybody's just trying to put out fires. Don't have time to give anybody a pat on the back. But the bottom line is, you know, the public, I can't post that on Facebook. Hey, you had a good case. This went really well. The video was great. The person from Abilene that was driving through our town is terrible. We should have locked him up. I can't post that. And the other thing that you need to know, and this is the last thing I'm going to say, there are a lot of investigations and things that may be going on that just aren't public knowledge, too. And so I think, you know, can't make cases without eyes and ears in the community, right? Every single one of you is a potential witness in a case. And none of these cases are any good without eyewitnesses, without people giving statements. So you're just as important a part of the process as the law enforcement people to getting this correct. And so, but on the same token, you know, the chief and the sheriff, if they're working a case, they can't just say, hey, I'm, you know, unless it's your case specific, they're not giving out public information on cases they're working. So I think the, you know, have some confidence in that there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes to address this and you know, proactively, not just reactively, and that some of that stuff's just not always out in the public. And, you know, if the chief's responding to Facebook, then he's not reviewing cases. And if we're patting each other on the back, then we're not trying to figure out ways to move court on Zoom. Hopefully, you know, let's be honest, we're all here in a public forum. That means we're going to be able to have court in a public forum. I do better in real life stuff. And maybe we can get back to, you know, I think the criminals and this element, you know, I don't think it happened at the beginning of COVID, but I think as COVID went on, I think there are a lot of these things that kind of became more and more prevalent, and we're just catching up. So I appreciate y'all being here and letting me address that. I hope that answers your question, Mark.
Let me make one quick statement real quick. I know that the mayor is here. Several of the city council members are here. The city manager, assistant city manager. Let me just say real quick that this past budget year, our city council voted and approved to give the police department several new officers and a couple of new vehicles. And in a time when our society is defunding and downsizing police agencies, our city stepped up to the plate and upsized the police department. And we should all be thankful for that. That is really a big deal. I'll turn it over to Ms. Stubbs now.
Hello. My name is Erin Joseph. For those of you that don't know me, I was born and raised here in Brady, Texas, and I graduated in 2005. So when I had my daughter, I knew that this was the place I wanted to move back to raise her. I enjoyed my time here, and I think it's a great community. So one of the very first things that I wanted to do was community involvement, and I sought out a board to sit on, and I was blessed to find Crime Stoppers. I came on with Crime Stoppers in late 2017, early 2018. And no disrespect to our former board, but our executive board now is rocking it. If you look back on our Facebook page from 2017 and look at the crime posts that we shared, we had maybe 24 likes and it reached maybe 30 people. Now, if you look at our Facebook page, just the cemetery vandalism alone reached 27,000 people and was shared 311 times. Another thing that we were behind the curve on was technology. So one of the things that all the Crime Stoppers organizations are using across the state is a new application called P3 Tips. We posted on our Facebook site telling you how to download it, how to use it. It's for Android and iPhone. And the reason why we never could get it was because it was so expensive. But through grant writing and fundraising, we were able to purchase it. So we've been pushing that application, and since then, for example, we would see maybe 9 tips in a year when we only had the call center. Now we see that many or more in a month. Very rarely do we get call center tips. So how the call center works, because I know that somebody said they've gotten like a voicemail, a lot of Crime Stoppers organizations aren't really using it anymore. We choose to use it because we realize that not everybody is tech savvy. Not everybody wants to, you know, download an app or use a phone. So how it works is we have a West Central wireless phone, and that is the 456 TIPS number that you see us advertise. We have a unique phone number that's assigned to us from a call center in LaPorte, Texas. So we take the West Central wireless phone and we put it on call forwarding. So when you call the 456 TIP number, it's actually sending you to a call center in LaPorte. They're going to come on. They're going to say McCullough County Crime Stoppers. And then they enter the information that you give them into the P3 website, which is where all of our automated tips go. So when we look at our tip system, it'll say if it came from the call center, if it came from the app. One of the good things about the app that we can't really do with the call center is we can actually have live conversations with the tipster. So that completely protects your anonymity. So if you submit a tip and it's not enough information, or maybe the law enforcement officer has an extra question that he thinks would help because he already knows some of the story, we can actually literally text on that app back and forth with the tipster so that we can have that, so we can gather even more information in more of a live setting versus the call center putting it in. All I can do is put a note in for the call center, hey, we would like to know XYZ. The call center has to wait for that person to call back and check. So you can see how that wouldn't be, you know, it really wouldn't get us anywhere. So one of the things that we also noticed that we did not know was that our phone, for whatever reason, stopped forwarding calls. And it was actually brought to our attention. Somebody reached out to us on Facebook and said, hey, I'm trying to report a tip, and I just keep getting a voicemail. We were able to call and get that remedied, and now we conduct a monthly mystery shop to our phone where we'll actually call. One of our members will call and report a fake tip just to see if it hits the system and how long it takes. Some of you might have questions as to, well, why was this posted on Facebook, or why did, you know, what happened to me take 2 or 3 weeks to get posted to Facebook when maybe a newspaper had already posted it or KNEL had posted it to their Facebook? We cannot release anything on any crime until we get permission from the investigating officer or the department. So, and really how it should work is the law enforcement should reach out to us and say, hey, we have this, we're working, will you post it? We've been without a law enforcement coordinator for a couple of months now, but we do, the police department gave us Sergeant Blake Morrow. He started with us last week. He's eager, he's excited. He has a great relationship with both the sheriff's office and the police department, and he's very eager to have those conversations with both departments and get us the information that we need to make sure that we are posting stuff to our Facebook page to help increase the number of tips that we get. But what we would like the community to know is that we don't have to post something on Facebook and say we're offering a reward for you to report. So as Chief Thomas was explaining, if something's going on, like you see a suspicious man and it just doesn't look right, you can call. If you don't want to call 911 because you don't feel like it's an emergency or you're uncomfortable, you can call the non-emergent dispatch line, which is also recorded, correct? Yeah, so it's recorded as well. So you can call dispatch and say, hey, there's this weird man walking down the street. You know, I just don't feel comfortable. He's looking in mailboxes, whatever it may be. And if you're interested in getting a reward for that, you can always go after you call, because it's an active thing happening. You can go to the P3 app and report it. And if the police show up and there was something going on or it does lead to an arrest, you're still eligible for a tip. One of the things, so you might be wondering, like, how do we give out tips or how we give out reward systems and things like that? There has to be an arrest made. We have made an exception on some things when we've recovered thousands of dollars in stolen property. We have given out rewards for that, for tips that led us to where it was. But we do have to validate these tips. So, for example, there was stolen property in an individual, and the sheriff's office was already on scene arresting the man and recovering the property, and somebody saw it, some third-party witness, and decided to go report it. Well, you don't get a reward for that because they already knew about it. So we actually call law enforcement, the investigating officer, check the times that the tip came in. Does anybody have any questions so far? That was when our phone was down. So if you call the 456 tips number, you're not supposed to get a voicemail. It's supposed to go straight to LaPorte. But for whatever reason, that wasn't happening. Like somebody else was trying to do work, but they ended up Facebook messaging us and going, hey, like, it's just going straight to a voicemail. Nobody's picking up. Because that 456 tips number is active 24/7. So you can call at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're going to get somebody at the call center. Oh, yes, it's fixed. And on top of that, we now audit it. So every month, one of the Crime Stoppers members will call and report a fake tip to the call center just to make sure that it's coming through and that we're seeing it. But P3 tips has been really a big push for us. We've gotten more tips than ever now that we've taken over that system and utilized it. So that's been great. And also neighborhood watch programs, which was the main thing I wanted to talk to you guys about. 3 years ago, we took over National Night Out. I know many of you have probably been a part of that or seen it. And that is what that is for. Not only is it there to thank law enforcement and show appreciation, but not only do the law enforcement officers go around, EMS goes around, volunteer fire goes around. All of the city council members also are escorted and go around to every stop. And we advertise it every year that is your chance to get to know who the officers are, who's EMS if you were to have an emergency, to express to city council that this, you know, this light's been broken or this stop sign's been missing, whatever it may be, and get to know those people. The first year that we did National Night Out, we had 12 stops. In 2019, we had 16, and we were excited to grow it even more. Unfortunately, when COVID came, we had to decrease it to just a thank you dinner drive-through for law enforcement. But those people that, if you go and look at the Facebook page, the addresses are on there. That was what it was meant to be. Those two people hosting those block parties, that was their chance to not only feed and hang out with their neighbors, but exchange phone numbers. You know, start a phone tree, per se. That way, if you're going out of town, you can text your neighbor and say, hey, just so you know, we're going to Florida for the week. Please the house. Things of that. I know that the city printed out neighborhood watch tips, a pamphlet whenever you came in. All of the Crime Stoppers members that are here tonight have on red name tags. After this is over, if you have any questions, please feel free to stop any of them or my staff. We also take new members. So if anybody's interested in joining, please let us know. You do have to do a background check, but you know. And then you can also sit in on a Crime Stoppers meeting. It has to be approved, and you have to sign a confidentiality notice. But if you're interested in what it is we do, we welcome you.
I just want to thank everybody for being here. It's one thing to have an opinion, it's another thing to show up and support it, and I definitely support that. I hope tonight kind of got the juices flowing a little bit, meaning understanding the importance of some things, understanding some things that maybe you thought that found out that that's not the way it is, and we can start building and working on that trust and earning it on a daily basis for you. Again, thanks, Matt. You want to say anything? Okay. Thank you for your time, and I hope you have a great evening.
So that concludes our town hall meeting at the Ed Davenport Civic Center. Featured speakers tonight were Chief Steve Thomas and Sheriff Matt Andrews, followed by many questions. And I am Rudy Rule reporting for KNEL, and now we send it back to the station.
Thank you for listening to the KNEL Radio Podcast. Be sure to tune in live to KNEL 95.3 FM and KNEL 1490 AM and KNELradio.com. For more KNEL Radio Podcast, including KNEL Sports, visit KNELradio.com homepage and click on the podcast of your choice to listen, download, and enjoy. KNEL Radio Podcast, making a difference. Thank you for listening today.